We are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 10, Maharaj Rahugana meets Jagbharata, Text 11. Jivan mirtatvam niyamena rajan ajyantavadyad vikritasya dristam Swasamyabhava dhruva ijayatra Taryuchate salvidhi kritya yoga Please chant. That was very funny. Thank you. Krishna. Somebody want to chant? Ladies? You going to do simultaneous translation? Jivat mirtatvam. The quality of being dead while living. Niyamena. By the laws of nature. Rajan. O king. Adi antavat. Everything material has a beginning and an end. Yat, because, vikritasya, of things that are transformed, such as the body, dristam, is seen, swasamyabhava, the condition of servanthood and mastership, Dhruvaha, unchangeable. Idya, O you who are worshipped. Yatra, wherein. Tarhi, then. Uchite, it is said. Asau, that. Vidikritya yoga. Fitness of order and duty. translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. My dear King, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you're thinking that you are the king and master and are thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today, you are a king, and I am your servant, but tomorrow, the position may be changed, and you may be my servant, and I your master. These are temporary circumstances created by providence. Purport. The bodily conception is the basic principle of suffering in material existence. What's the basic principle of our suffering? Thinking that we are what? Thinking that we are this body. In Kali Yuga especially, people are so uneducated that they cannot even understand that the body is changing at every moment and that the ultimate change is called death. That's a very interesting sentence, because right now people are very educated. If you go back 200 years, most people didn't go to school for very long. And now people are very educated. But Srila Prabhupada says now people are very uneducated. Obviously he has a different definition of education. Okay, going on. In this life, one may be a king, and the next life, one may be a dog, according to karma. The spirit soul is in a deep slumber caused by the force of material nature. He is put into one type of condition and again changed into another type. Without self-realization and knowledge, conditional life continues, and one falsely claims himself a king, a servant, a cat, or a dog. These are simply different transformations brought about by the supreme arrangement. One should not be misled by such temporary bodily conceptions. Actually, no one is master within the material world, for everyone is under the control of material nature, which is under the control of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the ultimate master. As explained in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Ekale Ishwar Krishna Arasabha Bhritya. The only master is Krishna, and everyone else is his servant. Forgetfulness of our relationship with the Supreme Lord brings about our suffering in the material world. Jivan Mirtatvam Niyamena Rajam Adyantavadyat Vikritasya Dristam Swasamyabhavo Dhruva Ijayatra Taryuchite so vihi kritya yoga. My dear King, you have unnecessarily accused me of being dead though alive. In this regard, I can only say that this is the case everywhere, because everything material has its beginning and end. As far as you're thinking that you are the king and master and are thus trying to order me, this is also incorrect, because these positions are temporary. Today you are a king, and I am your servant. But tomorrow the position may be changed, and you may be my servant, and I your master. These are temporary circumstances created by providence. So if I speak too fast, you'll tell me? Yes? Everybody else, you'll tell me if I'm too fast? Yes? And if I say something in English you don't understand, you will ask me? Yes? Agreed? Yes. Everybody agrees? Yes. Okay. If you think I say something crazy, why did she say that? Then just ask me to explain. Is that agreement? Okay, very good. So Srila Prabhupada's first sentence and last sentence are both about what? He uses a word here. Same word in the first sentence and the last sentence. What word was that? He used material. Yes, very good. And what else? Conception was in the first one, suffering. So he used in the first sentence suffering, and in the last sentence suffering. And in the first sentence, what did he say? What is the cause of our suffering? That was in the last sentence. Very good. In the last sentence, he said, our suffering is that we've forgotten our relationship with the Lord. And in the first sentence, he said, our suffering is because were identifying with the body. So the beginning of his purport, Prabhupada had a negative, and the end of his purport, he had a positive. So he's saying the same thing in a negative and positive way. You all understand that? The first sentence he said, we're suffering because we think we're the body. The last sentence he said, we're suffering because we forgot that we have a relationship with Krishna. So he's giving us what's not our identity and what is our identity. Okay? Is that clear? Yes? And he's saying in the middle of the purport, two main things. He's saying that people don't know what their identity is. They think that their identity is that they're a cat or a dog or a king or a servant. And then the next point he makes is that we think that we're the master, whatever we may be. Even if we think we're a dog, we think that we're the master. And this is not true. We are actually a servant. So we would all like to be free of suffering, yes? Does anybody want to suffer? No, nobody likes to suffer. And we have, of course, bodily suffering. We get sick. We have mental suffering. We have suffering from the other people in our lives, especially the ones we love the most. We have suffering from mosquitoes and flies and diseases. And we have suffering from the weather, right? And these are all of our suffering. And generally, we try to get rid of the suffering by adjusting those things. If my body hurts, then I try to adjust my body. That makes sense, right? I woke up this morning with my head hurting, so I put some oil on my head. Okay, then my head doesn't hurt. You follow? Right? So if I have some anxiety in my mind, I try to make my mind peaceful, okay? Peaceful mind. I have a problem with another person, then I try to settle my relationship with that person. Let's sit down, let's talk about it, let's work it out, or maybe let's get this person out of my life, right? So we try to work it out with the person, and if I have a problem with the mosquito, then I put a screen in the window, at least if you're from a civilized country. Some countries, they don't put screens in the windows. Yeah, and if you have a problem with the weather, then you build a house, you put in a heater, you put in an air conditioner. You understand? So we're trying to fix the suffering by adjusting the thing. Adjust the body, adjust the mind, adjust the relationship, adjust the weather. How well does this work? How well does this work? What would you say? Huh? It doesn't work. No, it doesn't work. It works a little bit. It works a little bit temporarily, you know, and we're constantly adjusting things, isn't it? Okay, now I got my body, right? Now my body's okay, okay. All right, body is okay. All right, now work on relationships. Uh-oh, body's out. Okay, fix body. All right, relationships is okay, okay. Okay, fix the weather. Uh-oh, relationships are out. Fix the relationships. And we're constantly fixing something, and sometimes everything is okay. Body's okay. Mind is okay. Relationships are okay. Weather is okay. I am in... Oops. Fix this one. Right? Isn't it like that? And sometimes they're all broken. Sometimes body's broken, mind's broken, relationships are broken, and the weather is broken. All at the same time. Right? And we never get them all working okay for very long. Maybe you have one day, you know, maybe you have one day when nothing is broken. And you're like, yes, I have mastered the material energy. Right? Hare Krishna. And then as Ananta Pruitt, I was saying, once your body gets old, you never can fix it quite. It's just like, you know, just like you have an old car or you have an old house and then you just know this thing is broken. Yes? Do you understand? And it's just broken. It can't be fixed anymore. You know, you just have to live with it. Or something's broken in your relationship and you just can't fix it. And you just live with it. Yeah. Right? Or the government, Hare Krishna, something's broken in your government and you just have to live with it. So it doesn't really work. And we certainly don't get to joy in this way. this doesn't bring us joy. And first, it definitely doesn't bring us peace, because I'm always worried that something's going to break again. And it will. It's guaranteed. You know, it will. So I'm always in anxiety. And Krishna says, without peace, you cannot really be happy. And the only happiness we get is everything's okay for right now. Or you get a happiness, well, this part is bad, but at least this part is good. You know, that's another technique that materialistic people do. Focus on the parts that aren't broken. Just don't think about the parts that are broken. And, you know, but that, none of that is really joy. You understand? It's not what we're looking for. We're looking for this expansive, dynamic joy and peace. So that can't be done just by trying to shift the material elements. So what's the real problem? Most people think the real problem is I haven't learned how to shift the material elements properly. And I find it fascinating that Prabhupada says here, people are not educated. People are really, really educated. Before the Industrial Revolution, most people just learned how to read and write and a little bit of mathematics. The amount of education maybe a 7 or 8 year old child has today. That was how much education most people had. And very, very few people before the Industrial Revolution had what we would call an undergraduate college degree. That was extremely unusual. Even if you became a medical doctor or a lawyer, you didn't usually do it in school. You usually apprenticed. You just apprenticed under a lawyer, you apprenticed under a doctor. And most people's jobs only required, you know, a very low level of academic education. The people who got the college education were mostly the aristocracy, and the kind of education they got was not practical. They got an education in classic literature and classic art and classic music and things like this. It wasn't for a practical life. Do you all understand what I'm saying? And nowadays, you know, just to have a job, just like Prabhupada was so shocked when he came to America and there was one Indian lady, and she said, oh, here's my son. And Prabhupada said, is he married? And she said, no. And he was just completely shocked. He said, why isn't he married? And the lady said, well, I have no objection if he can maintain a wife. And Prabhupada was again shocked. This is such a big job to maintain a wife. You know, I mean, it was unfathomable to him. So, you know, nowadays, if you want to maintain even a little flat, you know, a little apartment, and one other person, so you have to get a secondary school and you have to get an undergraduate degree. Now you have to get a master's degree. And you find many people, you find among the Indian community now, they won't let their children marry till they have a master's degree often. You know, so we're so educated. Just to get a basic job, you need to be in school until you're 25 years old. Many times till you're 30 years old, you have to be in school. But Prabhupada says here, people are not educated. Because despite all this education, people don't understand why they're suffering. All the education that they're getting is simply how to adjust the body, how to adjust the mind, how to adjust relationships, and how to adjust the weather. That's all they're doing. You understand? They're not doing anything else. And that doesn't work, no matter how good you are at it. You know who was really, really good at this was Hiranyakashipu. I mean, you want to talk about an expert in these. He was really, really expert. He could adjust his body so much that he could stay alive in his bones. Talk about meditation. I mean, he was really expert. He had complete control over his mind for 125 years of the demigods. And he could control all the weather. He was doing what the modern scientists want to do. He was doing. He was making the trees and plants produce all year artificially. And he was controlling the whole universe. But he wasn't happy. He was always taking intoxicants. That's a good sign you're not happy. and he was yelling at people for no reason, that's another very good sign that you're not happy. So here Prabhupada's giving us what's the real source of our suffering. And just very honestly, practically speaking, there's hardly any teacher or hardly any organization that will tell you this. You can go to many teachers and many organizations that will tell you how to adjust the body, adjust the mind, adjust relationships, and adjust the world and the weather and your relationship with the earth. But practically nobody tells you what is the real problem. Of course, we should adjust the body and adjust the mind and adjust relationships and adjust our dealings with the earth. It's not that we shouldn't do those things. But that's not going to make us happy. Do you understand? If I cut my finger, I don't just say, well, I'm not going to make any adjustment. You put on a bandage. The real problem is our identity. That's the real problem. Who I think I am. That's why I'm suffering. What? What does that mean? How is that the real problem? My dear friends, every single decision we make in life, every thought we have, every emotion we feel, every behavior we do is based upon our concept of who we are. That's a psychological fact. What we do is we get a sense of who we are. Okay, what? Who am I? So I am an old white American woman. Yeah. I'm a grandmother. I'm a mother. So we get these identities, and then we say, okay, so if I am a mother, what does a good mother do? And we have kind of this idea, this is the good mother. And then I make decisions based on what I think the ideal of my identity is. So this is what Maharaj Rahugana is complaining about. He's saying, I'm the king, you're the servant, and you're not being a good servant. You follow? A good servant does what the master says and tries to make the master happy. But you're not doing that. And he wasn't doing that, was he? I mean, he was carrying the palanquin, but he was equally concerned for the ants as for the king. He didn't have a greater concern for the king than for the ants. And so the king said, you're not a good servant. The king expected him to be functioning according to a material identity. And so he said, you're dead while living. You're useless, in other words. A fancy way of saying you're useless. In every society, we have many ways of calling people useless and foolish. And yes, every society has their insults. So this was his insult. You're just like a dead person. Because you're not awake to your identity as the servant of the king. Of course, it's interesting that he was forced to serve the king. It said that the king, he didn't even pay them. They were slaves. So they just, you know, they lost one of their carriers and they just found this man and he looked like, he was strong. So, okay, and they just forced him into the service without pay. But still, he's imposing this identity on him. So why is this the source of our suffering? Because it's not who I am. I'm measuring myself against a set of criteria that's not me. So, you know, there's that favorite quote, I think they attribute it to Einstein, that, you know, you can't put everybody according to the same test. If you say, okay, we're going to see who's a good person here by who can climb a tree. You know, the fish aren't going to be very good at climbing a tree. You have to measure each being by their own nature. Does this make sense to you? Yes? If I'm being measured according to someone else's set of requirements, I'm not going to do very well. Yes? Makes sense? If you want to measure me according to the requirements for a bird, I'm going to fail. I'm not going to be a good bird. It doesn't matter how hard I try. While I have a human body, I can't be a good bird. So you know what? None of us are going to be a good material identity. We're all going to fail at our material identity because it's not who I am. This is a very simple point. Does everybody get this point? If I say your happiness and your success in life is how good of a tiger you can be or how good of a bird you can be, we will all fail. It's not who I am. So if we're going to say my happiness depends on how good of a man, how good of a woman, how good of an American, how good of a Slovenian, how good of a daughter, a son, a mother, a father, but that's not who I am. I'm not going to be very good at something that's not who I am. It's just a really simple, simple, simple idea. And all these things that bother me, my bodily pains, my mental pains, my relationship pains, my nature pains, are all due to trying to be somebody that I'm not. It's just super simple. So if you want to be happy, be who you are. Is that pretty simple? If you really want to be happy and satisfied with yourself, Krishna says in the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, one of my favorite verses, he says, you will relish and rejoice in the self. My dear friends, I have not been able to relish and rejoice in my false self. You know, people try to teach you that, love yourself. But if they have the wrong self, you can't love it. It's not lovable. Sorry. You know, this body's not very lovable. It's actually kind of disgusting. My mind is not very lovable either. I don't know about any of you, but my mind is not very lovable. If we really want to love ourselves and be happy with ourselves, we have to have the right self. And guess what? We're all really, really, really good at being ourselves. Of course we are. Duh. Isn't that just logical? That if I got the right self, that I'd be really good at being me? Yes? It's almost what we call a tautology. It's almost circular reasoning. You're going to be really good at what you are. Well, of course you are. You're going to be perfect at what you are. Always. Is this all logical? If it's not logical, is it not logical? Then, if you have a question, just wait a minute. But if it's not logical, then we'll try to fix it. Is your problem that it was not logical? Okay. I must be perfect at who I am because that's by definition. I'm perfectly what I am. Well, of course. And I don't have to become perfect at what I am. I am always perfect at what I am. And not only am I perfect at what I am, but what I am is also perfectly in harmony with everything. Always. Always has been, is, and always will be. Who I really am is perfectly in harmony with this body, with this mind, with other people, with the world, with God. Because it's real and it's true. So the main mission of our, it should be, the main mission of us as members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness should be to try as far as possible to act on the identity of who we really are. Now, that's a lot easier than it sounds. Because you might say, well, but I don't really know who I am. It's a problem. And all I know is this false identity. Well, that's not really true. We know at least we have the concept that I am a soul and I am a servant of God. And we can act at least in that general way from the first minute you hear about it. Now, I may not know all the details of my own self. I may not know, you know, that I'm a 7-year-old cowherd boy named so-and-so. I may not know that kind of detail right now. If we keep chanting Hare Krishna, we will know those kind of details, by the way. We're supposed to get those revealed to us. But at least I can know that I am a servant of God. And how can I act in that way? I can act in that way by saying, okay, what would a good servant of God do? Instead of what would a good mother do? What would a good woman do? What would a good man do? What would a good Slovenian citizen do? What would a good servant of God do? That's all you have to do. Is that very hard? Is that very hard? Just switch it. And when we do that, our suffering will decrease. That doesn't mean our body won't break or our mind won't break or our relationships won't break or the weather won't break. Those are all going to break. But it won't affect us very much because it's not who we are. This is the question to ask. What would a spirit soul do? what would a spiritual being who's a servant of God, what would they do? If I'm Krishna's servant, how would I treat someone? So yesterday a devotee said something to me that was very, very, very profound. He said, Urmila, in Manashiksha you're teaching that we should have unprecedented love. Actually, Raghunath Das Goswami's teaching it, for all the devotees, the beginner, the intermediate, advanced. He said, but some of the people we consider our enemies are also in those categories. Isn't that true? Some of the people who criticize us, some of the people who give us difficulty, they're a beginner, intermediate, or advanced devotee, yes? And so he said, do you love them? So I was thinking about this a lot in the long, long car ride here. And then again this morning, do I love those people who criticize me? I can say, well, may you be happy, but do I love them? And I realized the answer was no, I don't. In fact, if they went to another planet, I wouldn't mind. And I thought, you know, that's not acting as a servant of God. You understand? Does this make sense to everybody? If I'm really acting as a soul and a servant of God, then I would love the people who criticize me just as much as I love the people who praise me. I'd actually love them. Not just respect them, not just tolerate them, not just wish them well on another planet. May you be happy in Nigeria. You know. May you be happy on the moon. But really love them. And then I could understand. I wasn't acting as a soul. I was acting according to my false identity. Does this make sense to everybody? Really, 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 really simple thing. And then we become happy. And our happiness stops being dependent on the body and the mind and our relationships and our situation, which is really what we want. Prabhupada says in the first canto, that the soul has a need to be free. So we tend to think this freedom means getting out of the body, getting out of the mind. One devotee recently was asking the question, we do get rid of our mind, don't we? I said, yeah, we do. He said, oh, that's so exciting. So we think like that. Freedom means just getting rid of the body, getting rid of the mind, getting rid of the being on a material planet with material relationships. But then that just sort of leads to, you know, a Brahmajyoti idea, or even worse, maybe a Buddhist idea. But what we're really trying to do is we're really trying to be unaffected. That's actual freedom. And therefore you find, like Rukmini says to Krishna, she says, I can take birth in any species, I don't care, as long as I'm absorbed in service to you. And we read that and we think, what? What is she talking about? I don't want to be a bug. That would be awful. But the mood of those who realize that they're Krishna's servant, they genuinely don't care. They just genuinely don't care. I mean, think about Jed Bart, who's saying this. He was the king, right? He was. As Bharat, he was the king. And he had servants. Then he was a deer. He was an animal. And then in this life, he keeps getting mistreated. He's really mistreated. The only person who was nice to him was his father. Maybe his real mother, I don't know. But his stepmother, his stepbrothers, they mistreated him. And then they had the dacoits who tried to kill him. And now the king is mistreating him. I mean, he's really had a tough life materially. But he's not affected. Because he knows it doesn't matter. Is everybody praising me? Is everybody criticizing me? Is my life a success? Is my life a failure? What matters is that I have my relationship with Krishna. I mean, these things change. They change. You know, the Pandavas were the emperors of the world, and they did the Rajasuya Yajna, and everybody was falling at their feet. And then they lost a gambling match, and they were exiled. And they lived for a year as servants. Yudhisthira, the emperor of the world, was a servant. Arjuna was living as a eunuch, dance teacher. How embarrassing. Arjuna, I mean, just think about who is Arjuna. He's one of the most male, you know, he's this big warrior guy. Right? And he's this eunuch dance teacher. Bhima's a cook. You know? This is the way of the world. This is the way of the world, you know. One day you're an emperor, and the next day you're taking care of the horses. Draupadi was the empress, and then she was just a maid. And she was so low in the hierarchy and the status that when Kichak was harassing her, nobody took care of her. Oh, she's just a maid. So this is the way it goes. And Prabhupada talks about a king or a dog. He's talking about Nehru, I'm sure. Nehru was this big, you know, in India. And then Prabhupada heard from some astrologer, oh, now he's a dog in Sweden. We can be some great big person and then nobody. And it not only happens from one life to the next, it can happen in this life. You can be rich and famous and successful, and then the next day you can lose everything, isn't it? Right? And everybody ignores you. I remember when there was that big tsunami. Where was that big tsunami? That they didn't have any warning. It was a few years ago. It wasn't in Sri Lanka. No. It wasn't in Japan. I think it was Indonesia, yeah. And there wasn't a warning system. Usually for tsunamis, there's a warning system. Like where we stay in Hawaii, they have a warning for tsunamis. And they test it the first of every month. Of course, one time the tsunami came on the first of the month. And so everybody thought it was the practice and nobody got out of the way. But anyway, with that tsunami in Indonesia, I remember reading about one man that he was out in his boat. He was a fisherman. And when you're out in a boat far enough away, the tsunami doesn't affect you. And he came back and his mother, his father, his wife, his 11 children, his home, everything was gone. But when we're on the platform of a soul, then it doesn't affect us. Therefore, Krishna talks about being detached, whether things are auspicious, inauspicious, happy, distressed, friends, enemies, success, failure, honor, dishonor, fame, infamy. That doesn't mean that you're just like dead. Nothing bothers me because I'm a chair. If you say, nice chair, you say, bad chair, the chair doesn't care. It's not that you become like that. It's that you're functioning according to who you really are. And when we're functioning according to who we really are, we are perfect. There's no failure. There's no pain. There's no failure. There's no disharmony. So that is where we need to put our emphasis, to change our identity, change how we think. It's a very small adjustment. It's not, Prabhupada says this quite a number of times, it's a small adjustment, but with a big result. You know, sometimes you can make a very small change that has a very big effect. What would, if I were a pure devotee, because actually I am, really, I'm just covered. I'm just sleeping, as Prabhupada says in the purport. If I were a pure devotee, what would I do? Undo that? If I were a good servant of the Lord, what would I do? How would I think? What would I say? Now, of course, we also have to play the games in this world. Otherwise, we'd all be avadutas. So part of what a good devotee would do would be to try to play the game in this world as expertly as possible, but you're not going to get it right. Do you all understand what I'm saying? So we have a game. I'm somebody's daughter. I'm somebody's son. I'm not their daughter. I'm not their son. It's a game. But okay, I'll play it for Krishna as best that I can, but I'm not going to get it right. Sometimes I'll get it right. Sometimes I won't. Sometimes people will say, you're a very good daughter. Sometimes they'll say, you're a very bad daughter. Oh, well, that's not who I am. I just try to do it as best that I can to please Krishna. That's all. I'm a brahmachari, I'm a grahastha, I'm a vanaprastha, I'm a sannyasi. That's not who I am. Okay. Yeah, try to be a good sannyasi, try to be a good grahastha to please Krishna, but I'm not going to do it right. I'm not always going to be a good grahastha. I'm not always going to be a good sannyasi. It's not going to happen. Because that's not who I am. Try to do that for Krishna. Some people will praise me. Some people will criticize me. I'll fail. I'll succeed. It doesn't matter. But I can always succeed at who I really am. So, questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes.
Attitude we should have to our body because
right there you said which attitude we should have to our body. Okay, change your possessive pronoun. No, change your possessive pronoun. Do you know what a possessive pronoun is? You said our body. Whose body is it? It's not yours. Does that help?
Yes, but I want to ask Jada Bharata.
Yes.
When the chief was trying to kill him, uh-huh. He was not mind.
Yes.
I think he doesn't mind if this king decides to kill him.
Correct.
But Srila Prabhupada, in commentary, I was reading the chapter, wrote that devotee should protect his body from the death. We should not be pacified when anybody tries to kill us.
Well, it depends if you can. Could Judd Barrett have done anything with those thieves? Did he have the ability? I'm asking you a question. Could he have protected himself? I don't think so. No. He wasn't trained in that life as a kshatriya. In his other life, as Bharat the king, he might have been able to. there were some of the kshatriyas who could fight alone against 10,000 people. Much better than any movie star, you know. Or Ramchandra, who fought alone against 14,000. But as Jed Bharat, he was born in a Brahmin family. He didn't have any training in martial arts. I don't think he could have done it. And against the king, it wouldn't have been proper. If the king wants to execute you for disobedience, then that's not proper to fight against the king. It wouldn't have been proper etiquette, even if he could have done so. So it depends. Can you do it or not? If you can't, then you accept. What else are you going to do? We all have to accept things that we don't have the power to change. You know, if the doctors tell you you have cancer and you're going to die in 3 days and there's no treatment, what are you going to do? You know, there's no way to fight. You understand? So, yeah, we should try to keep our body healthy and strong. It's Krishna's body. It's less like we try to keep the cars strong. But if you can't, you can't. I really like with Ambarish and Durvasa. Ambarish did not defend himself against Durvasa Muni. You know that story? A little bit? Ambarish was the king. Durvasa was a brahmana, and Durvasa came as a guest to the king's house. And Durvasa felt offended by an action of the king, which was actually faultless. So he created from his mystic power a demon to kill the king. But the king didn't resist. Now, if this king had been on a battlefield and someone tried to kill him, do you think he would have resisted? What do you think? Yes. The same king, Ambarish, if he was on a battlefield and somebody on the battlefield was trying to kill him, he would resist and try to kill them. But when it was a brahmana guest, he did not. And he folded his hands and said, if you want to kill me, fine. And then Krishna protected him. So when we should defend our body is very conditional. It's not absolute. If I've got 20 thieves around me with knives, I can't do it. What am I going to do to defend myself? I don't have an option. I don't know some kind of martial arts where I can defeat 20 people at once with knives. Maybe you do, but I don't. I would just have to let them kill me. And Ambarish could have fought against Durvasa Muni, but he made the choice not to. He said, this is a Brahmin, he's my superior, and he's my guest, he's my superior. And if he wants to kill me, he can kill me. He has the, I give up the right to defend myself in this situation. Is that okay? You had a question, Prabhu?
Yes, one question. In this class, it's when actually we should look for ourselves like a soul.
Yes. Yes.
What about these things, you know, sometimes the body, you know, is kind of acting like, for example, human, as like a deep of Chopra or that.
Mm-hmm.
What about these things, because it's not addressed our real self.
Okay, so should we use any kind of mundane self-improvement? Oh, sure, why not? Just like you might use a mundane program for physical improvement. You know, Prabhupada would take a walk every day and get a massage every day. So you could also try to do something for mental self-improvement, but don't think it's going to really solve your problem. The best that those mental self-improvements can do is move you in the modes. They can move you from ignorance to passion or passion to goodness. Most of them just move you to passion. Some of them may actually be playing with goodness. But they're not going to bring you to bhakti. That may be helpful. You know, if the way, I mean, sometimes you see husbands and wives, they're dealing with each other in tamagun. So, you know, if you can get them to deal with each other even in rajagun, that's an improvement. Do you understand? That's okay. I mean, just because we're chanting Hare Krishna doesn't mean we don't use a heater in windows for the weather. I mean, someone like Jed Barrett didn't. He didn't do any of those things. He didn't even bother with washing his clothes. He didn't make any adjustments for the body. He ate whatever his brothers gave him, even if it was worm-eaten cakes. He made no adjustment for the body or the mind or relationships in any way. He didn't deal with anything. He acted like he was deaf, dumb, and blind. And he didn't interact with the world. He was what we called an avaduta. So if you're going to live like that, but that wouldn't, I don't think Srila Prabhupada would want a whole society of avadutas. Most of all, frankly, most of us wouldn't be able to maintain that. It would be artificial. So it wouldn't be part of our preaching mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and it wouldn't be something that most of us would be capable of doing. Those persons didn't act as an avaduta as a process. They acted as an avaduta as a natural result of their just complete disinterest in anything in the world. So I don't see the difference. If you can turn on the air conditioner and you can, you know, take some herbal tea when you're sick, then why can't you learn some other way of dealing with the mind and relationships in the world? Sure, but don't think it's going to solve your problem. This is in the definition of bhakti. You have anya bilasita sunyam gana karma anavartam anukulina krishna anushilanam bhakti uttama. So the key you're looking at here is jnana karma dhanavratam. Can we do things that are karma, jnana, and yoga? The answer is yes. They're not forbidden. It's not like anya bilasita sunya. So we should be free of material desires. That should be zero. In other words, my reason for being a devotee shouldn't be that I want to be rich. If my reason, you see people like that, you know, they go in every religion. They come to a place of worship just to get something material. They don't care about their relationship with the Lord. Just like you go to a store to buy something. You don't go to a store because you care about the person running the store. Yes? Correct? Generally. I mean, maybe you have a friend that runs a store. But usually that's not the purpose. And if you can buy something at a reduced price, you're very happy because you don't care about the person running the store. You know, if you want to get shoes in there for sale, half price. You don't go to the owner and say, are you sure? Did you want to sell me these at half price? Will you make enough money to pay your electricity? And I'll give you full price for them. So that's not our mood in going to a store, yes? So people come to Krishna like that. Krishna, I'm coming to you just to get something. And if I can get it on sale, that's even better. And you know. That's their mood. So that should be zero. We shouldn't have that mentality at all. Of course, we can ask Krishna for things. If we want something, better we ask Krishna than somebody else. But that shouldn't be the reason we're here. Do you understand the difference? Krishna, I'm here for a loving relationship with you, and I'm really sorry. Could you fix my stomachache if you want to? But I'm really here for a loving relationship. I'm not here for you to fix my stomachache. And if you fix it or not, I'm still here. So that's anya bilasita sunya. But jnana karma and anavratam, jnana karma yoga, they don't have to be sunya. You don't have to have no actions, no philosophy, and no yoga. That doesn't have to be zero. They just can't cover your bhakti. You follow? We can do things that are within the realm of karma. That's varnashram is all in the realm of karma. Completely. Varnashram is completely in the realm of karma. You can do that. You can become detached through philosophy. You can steady your mind and get some health through yoga. But don't let them cover your bhakti. Don't think that those are going to be the way that you're going to become happy and self-realized. It's not. You can become really, really expert at dealing with the mind and really expert at dealing with relationships, which is what most of those things are about. You know, if you move through the modes, you become better at it. So people in the mode of ignorance are really bad at controlling the material energy. They don't know how to do it at all. In the mode of passion, they kind of get it somewhat. And the mode of, people in the mode of goodness are really good at controlling the material energy. But you still can't control the material energy because we're not a master. We're the servant. So, yeah, they're helpful, but don't let them cover your bhakti. Don't think they're your process. Does this make sense to everybody? Sure, we can learn how to be, you know, good grihasthas and good parents and good brahmacharis. But that's not who we are. But those things can be useful. That can be useful. I mean, we can learn from everybody. It's not that we can only learn anything from, you know, second initiated first class devotees in the Hare Krishna movement, and we can't have nothing to learn from anybody else. I mean, that would be a little ridiculous. Even Srila Prabhupada, when he was in the hospital, I think in New Jersey, and one of the doctors said, you know, the old man prays too much, he needs to get exercise. And the devotees were really upset. And Prabhupada said, no, he has said the right thing. And it was after that that Prabhupada started going on a brisk walk every morning. So Prabhupada was grateful. Or there was one man in India that said, why are you printing magazines? People just throw them away. You should print books. People will keep them. And then Prabhupada switched his emphasis from back to Godhead magazine to the Bhagavatam. So, why not? Yes.
Yes, thank you for this lecture. When you mentioned, like, we play different roles in society, it reminded me of this psychotherapist who's actually Roberto Sajoli.
Who's actually what?
Roberto Sajoli.
Okay.
He developed psychoanalysis, but psychosynthesis.
Hmm.
He explains how from different roles that we play in society, like mothers, daughters, bosses, I don't know, different interactions and different roles in the body, in society, that we develop different sub-personalities. And he speaks how all the problems are actually created in our minds because we separate ourselves as a soul with the different concept that we just perceive them as being separated from spirit, only material. So I'm wondering whether he developed this psychosynthesis, how we should actually again connect all the roles that we play in this life with our soul, with our center, with our core. He's not speaking about Krishna as a person, but I think he...
Well, the problem is if you don't understand God as a person, then it's very hard to do that meaningfully. Because I need to connect my roles in this world with personal service to a personal God. If I just connect my roles in this world with some vague idea of spirit, then I may run into other problems. So I'm not familiar with this particular person, his particular philosophy. But if it's not personal, it's going to be difficult to apply it. So if I think, well, I have a role as so-and-so's son, and I'm doing this to please a person, Krishna, that's how I connect it. I may or may not please my mother. I may please my mother on Monday and not on Tuesday. You know, but I can always please Krishna with how I deal with my mother. So in that way, we synthesize it. And I'm not sure. If that's what he means, then that's very nice. If he means something else, then I don't know.
My question to you was actually that you said that Varnashrama is actually purely on karma level.
Totally.
Is it like, could be like really on Sanatana Dharma level?
No.
Really,
no.
No.
Varnashram totally, completely, absolutely has to do with the body and the mind. It has nothing to do with anything else. And then you use it for Krishna. Well, you're using it as above. It's like, you know, you have a pot. Your pot is not hot. When you put the pot on the fire, the pot is hot. But the pot's never hot. The fire's hot. The pot is never a heat source. If the pot, as long as the pot's on the fire, and a little bit after you take it off the fire, it's hot, but the heat isn't coming from the pot. All Varnashram is, Varna is what is your way that you earn a livelihood. That's what Varna is. How do you make money? How do you maintain yourself? That's what Varna is. And then do it according to your nature, for the pleasure of the Lord, as a protector rather than as an exploiter. That's Varna. So how you maintain your body is material. Completely. But if you do it as a service to God, if you just do it according to your nature and as a protector rather than an exploiter, then, you know, it will give you good karma. But if you do it for the pleasure of the Lord, then you can say it becomes like bhakti. It acts like bhakti. Like the pot acts like fire. You'll burn your hand by touching the pot. And then what is ashram? Ashram is you're taking the natural changes that the body and mind go through during life. You're a child, you're youthful, you're middle-aged, you're an adult, you're at old age, right? And you take those and use the natural tendencies. When you're a child, you want to learn. When you're youthful, you want romantic relationships and money. When you're retired, you want to relax, you want to be more introspective, you want to get rid of things. People often want to travel when they're retired. Then when you're really old, you want to prepare for death. So people naturally want to do those things. Do them in relationship to Krishna. That's ashram. Ashram is take the natural tendency you have at your different stages of life and do it for Krishna. But the natural tendency you have at your different stages of life, that's material completely. You're not a child. You're not middle-aged. You're not, you know, that's not you. So that has nothing to do with the spirit. If you do it for Krishna, the doing it for Krishna has to do with the spirit.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but the thing itself doesn't.
So actually all the problems that we create in our lives are due to the separation between the material and spiritual level.
Absolutely. Yeah, and thinking the material level is ourself. Because not just connecting it, you don't want to just connect it like some pious person or like a demigod connects it. It's also how do you connect it? If you just say, well, I'm praying to God that I have a happy family and I'm praying to God that I have a lot of money. I'm training my family in my religion. You know, I am a Methodist and I'm training my children to be good Methodists. And in this way, I'm connecting my life to God. So it's not just connecting your life to God. That's not enough. It also has to be finding who I am and finding my identity. Otherwise, you're just a pious person in the world and you become a demigod. Yeah. Yes. We're going late. Am I in trouble, Ananta?
Last question.
Okay.
You were explaining how it is important that we try to identify with our spirit in that.
Yes.
So if I'm servant of Krishna, so then in a given circumstance, one should think what would, for example, Philip, what would he do? So I'm wondering, how does this apply in challenging circumstances? For example, where maybe in some interpersonal relationship when a person is aggressive or agitating one, and then although I know how beautiful to behave, I don't have the spiritual strength for that. So instead of being peaceful, calm, and kind, I just become agitated and I start speaking strongly, or I cannot.
Okay, so what do we do in circumstances where I know what a pure devotee would do, but I'm not yet able to act on that platform? Then at the very least, I can recognize what the cause of my suffering is. Doing just that is a huge relief. I can say, wait a minute, the reason I'm so disturbed is not the other person's behavior. The reason I'm so disturbed is that I'm not able to act as myself. The reason I'm so disturbed by the fact that I don't have money, or the fact that somebody's yelling at me, or the fact that I'm sick, is because I'm not able yet to act on the spiritual platform. The problem isn't that I'm sick. The problem isn't that I'm poor. The problem isn't that this person is mean to me. The problem is that I'm not able to act on the spiritual platform. And just knowing that shifts things tremendously. It turns my attention to what I need to work on, rather than turning my attention to something that I'm not able to fix at all, or only a little bit temporarily. Is that okay? Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Then we can find that we may be going on for year after year after year, and decade after decade after decade, and we're still taking shelter of lust. Maybe not so bad as these demons here, but in some way or another. So particularly those practices of kirtan and japa. Of course, everything we're doing, our practice of deity worship, our practice of studying the scriptures, everything we're doing is meant to bring us to that state. But particularly the holy name is supposed to clear our consciousness. And that will be the effect, that we'll find that it's harder and harder and harder for us to become overwhelmed by lust. It's harder for us to be surprised that the lust has to take ever more subtle and difficult disguises to fool us, because we're able to recognize it in most of its forms. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions? Yes.
There is no way out. Like, that we become so busy that there is no any methods
that will take us out. Yes and no. On the platform, Krishna does say in this chapter that those who get deeply into this lust and anger, he puts them into lower species again and again and again, where it's very difficult for them to get out. But any soul will eventually come back to a human form. And in the human form, there's some kind of religion in society. And any time you have a contact with the Lord, it is possible to get out. So that opportunity keeps being offered to the soul, at least periodically.
Because for me, for example, I'm coming here for about 3 years now. Some things just stay the same. There's no progression. Like, for the things which I liked 3 years ago, and I still like them today.
I think what most of us see is that in taking up Krishna consciousness, so I can ask everybody. So all of you here, do you have some things about Krishna consciousness that you find really, really easy? Who has something in Krishna consciousness you find super easy, just like breathing? Okay. And whoever you find some things in Krishna consciousness, kind of medium. You know, they're pretty easy, but you have to make some effort. And whoever you have some things in Krishna consciousness that are just extremely hard and you've just been struggling with them for years. So, and by the way, those are going to be different for everybody. So if we were to ask, I'm not going to do that, but if we were to ask people here to make a list, what are the things you find super, so easy that you don't even notice you're doing them anymore? What are the things that are, you know, they're pretty easy, but you have to make an effort. And what are the things that are just really, really hard? You'll find that one person's list of really, really hard is another person's list of super easy. Which is why we sometimes judge each other very harshly. You know, that what I find super easy for someone else, maybe they've been struggling with it for 20 years. And they just can't seem to make any progress at all. But it works the other way. You know, the thing that I'm struggling with, they might find super easy. So we all have some very deep-rooted, specific attachments. And the reason we don't make progress with those is that we're taking shelter of them. And we're very afraid that if we give up their shelter, that we'll suffer in some way. So our fear and attachment to them is so strong that we just hold on to them like anything. They will go. They will go. Best to focus on the successes. Don't give that much attention to the failures. Give mostly attention to the successes, and the other things will come. But we just see practically each of us has certain things that are seem to be really, really, really difficult, really deep-rooted things. Some of us may not even be aware of those when we first come to Krishna consciousness. We may not even see them as a problem. And after chanting for a while, you start to see, whoa, I really have a problem with this. And it's really, really deep. It is possible. I mean, I was just, again, watching a video of Prabhupada the other day where he said, you know, it's just a matter of a moment. If you really surrender to Krishna, it's a matter of a moment. But most of us are not willing to really surrender to Krishna in the matter of a moment. If you want to see what's blocking you, you can always ask and they'll show you what's blocking you. You may be surprised. I remember one time I was at our temple in Delhi in India at the restaurant there and talking with another devotee who was quoting that Bhaktisiddhanta says and Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna is the transcendental autocrat. And as soon as he said the word autocrat, everything in me just rose up in rebellion. It's like I had this wave of rebellion. You know what an autocrat is? So auto means self. A krat, it has to do with governments, like a dictator. I always say someone's an autocrat. I mean, they're like a dictator. They do whatever they want. So that word is very politically charged in the world today, right? We all want to have democracies and we don't want to have any dictator. So Krishna is the transcendental dictator. I didn't care about the word transcendental. That didn't change anything for me. And it was this instant. As soon as he said Krishna is a transcendental autocrat, there was an instant, instant spontaneous rebellion. And I was so shocked. I was like, wow. I really don't want to surrender to Krishna. It's really, that's the reality. Do you understand what I'm saying? So you can ask Krishna, if there's something that's been an ongoing problem, you can say, what's really going on here? And you may be surprised to see what's really going on there. You know, the more that you take up, again, in a very deep, contemplative, absorbed way, the practices of japa and kirtan particularly, but everything, again, deity worship, reading, all of our practices, the more you'll start to see what you're holding on to. Yes? Has everyone had this experience? You start to see things very clearly. And someone will say something about surrender to Krishna and something in you goes, oh! No! So outside you may, yeah, I want to surrender. But inside you're going, no way. Forget it. I'm not surrendering anybody. So when we notice those sort of things, then we see, well, this is why I'm having so much difficulty with this or that other external behavior. That was a very thoughtful question. Somebody else? Yes?
How can I check myself? Am I taking shelter to Krishna or to Maya? Because sometimes I think, oh, I'm doing service for Krishna, but actually it's...
Yeah, we're going to talk about this with Manushiksha, especially verse 6. Are you coming? I'm not sure. Especially verse 6. We will talk about that. But also we'll be talking about that next Sunday for the Sunday feast in a shortened form. When does Maya masquerade as Krishna? How does Maya masquerade as Krishna? Rupa Goswami talks about this, about weeds that look like bhakti. So this is what I mean with the ability to discern what is Krishna and what is Maya. Like when I say very far away. In other words, when it's before you've really done anything about it. Or just like the first time I tried to go grow flowers, I had no experience with growing flowers. So I bought all these flower seeds and I just got the ground ready and then I put the seeds anywhere. And very soon the whole area was covered with little green things. And being completely, absolutely, totally inexperienced, I had no way of telling which of the little green things were marigolds and zinnias and which of the little green things were weeds. I had to wait until they got big enough. You understand? And then, of course, it was a mess. And once I became a little bit more experienced gardener, then I could distinguish, oh, I know you. You're a marigold. I was just at a temple that had all these beautiful tulsi plants. But in the pots, all these little weeds were growing. And I wonder if these people think they're tulsis. I wonder if they can't recognize the difference between tulsi and something else. So what gives us the ability to recognize the difference between a flower and a weed when it's really, really, really small? The clearing of the consciousness that comes through very focused, deep spiritual practice. And you should be getting better and better at that. So it should be that Maya has to take increasingly subtle and disguised forms in order to fool you. Do you understand? If you're still being fooled by the same things you were fooled by 2 years ago and 5 years ago, then you need to go deeper in your practice. Because that's definitely one of the effects. I mean, Krishna talks about this a little later in the Bhagavad Gita. How the mode of goodness, you can see what's to be done and what's not to be done, what's binding, what's liberating. That's just the mode of goodness. That's not even bhakti. Attempt to distinguish reality from illusion. But I mean, until we're completely pure, we'll still be fooled by some things. As I said, that's a lot about what Manashiksha is about, especially verses 4, 5, 6, 7. How we become fooled by things. And Raghunath Das Goswami goes more and more and more subtle as to what can appear to us to be spiritual and actually is not. And that's quite a lot of what here is probably talking about in the purport, people who make up their own religion, their own vows, and their own honor in society, and they're really nasty things, but they're thinking, oh yeah, this is a great thing. I mean, once you get into something, you can tap, there are certain symptoms. The symptoms of whether or not you're taking shelter of Krishna is very much from Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, where Krishna says, Rajavija Rajaguyam Pavitram Idamutamam Pratyaksha Vagamam Dhammam Susukam Kartamamiyam. So you get full of knowledge. Full of wisdom, kind of, you know. You get full of wisdom, understanding. And Rajaguyam, very secretive. You really understand the essence of things. Pavitram, you feel purified, you feel clean. Dharmam, it's very real, it's a very authentic experience. Susukam, it's full of happiness. So when you take shelter of Krishna, you feel those subjective experiences. Rather than here just anxiety and hankering and lamentation. And then, of course, is it in the scripture? Is it taught by the sadhus? Is it given by guru? You know, is it taught in the shastras that if you take shelter of Krishna, you go into some place and kill a bunch of people? You know, no, so that's not taking shelter of Krishna. So those are some pretty simple ways. Is it in the scriptures? Is it taught by the saints? Is it taught by the guru? Does it bring me wisdom? Does it bring me purification? Does it bring me joy? Does it bring me authenticity? Anything else? Is that all right? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.